Welcome to the Bonfire. I'm your host, Morgan, aka Bon Diesel, and this is a podcast about video game news, reviews, rumors, and speculation. This week, I'll be covering Microsoft's big layoff, because we will never get away from this story, but it keeps happening, so we're going to keep talking about it. Switch to screen rumors, Palworld continues to dominate, and much more. A few things before we get started. On YouTube, please subscribe to the channel, hit the like button, and comment down below with whatever you want. A question, a hello, your favorite burrito place. Go for that. Subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform, including Spotify and iTunes, which you can use to leave reviews as well. Please do it. They really help me out. We haven't gotten one in a while. If we get a 5-star review, I will read it here on the show. A special thank you to all of the patrons and YouTube members, including Hassan, YouTubes, Neuronix, PK, Cage Nephilim, and Horseman. If you are interested in supporting this podcast, consider becoming a member on YouTube, subscribing over on Twitch, joining my Patreon or Ko-Fi at the link in the description below, or buying some merch, which is also in that link. Let's get into the gaming news. First, we're going to start with Xbox and the main downer story of the week. Microsoft Game Studios hit with nearly 2,000 layoffs. I actually saw that as a headline of hit with layoffs. It's like, well, the studios were hit with layoffs, but it kind of implies that it's something that happened to Microsoft and not a decision they made. But that's what happened. The notable thing about this is that the Activision Blizzard King Studios were part of this. There was a kind of news story here where Mike Ybarra, who's the president of ABK, or I think of at least Blizzard, is also leaving, but on his own accord, he was not laid off. This was notable because just a few months ago, I believe before the deal finalized, he said he was there for the long haul, so something changed. It's not that surprising. Leadership changes after these big acquisitions are pretty normal and to be expected even. But with the layoffs, it's an interesting thing to talk about, especially after the last year-ish where there's been, it's up to like 15 or 16,000 layoffs in the last year. It's an interesting story because layoffs are pretty normal, especially in the tech industry and especially in the gaming industry. Now, if you say something like that, a lot of people's first reaction is like, just because it's normal doesn't mean it's okay. And this is just it's a symptom of the poison that is capitalism, which is true. Sure. I agree. Like, I don't think that these layoffs are a good thing. I'm not going to celebrate it or find some way to do a fanboy spin on it to be like, yeah, layoffs are dope. You know, that means Xbox is doing great, you know. But, you know, I also am not really going to dive into the other side of things where you see like some Sony fans being like, yeah, Xbox is failing. They're never going to make any more hardware. And like, both sides are silly, right? You know, trying to justify it or, you know, promoting it or whatever, celebrating it. But I think there is an interesting commentary to notice. And, you know, when I see developers react to this really negatively, it makes sense. I've seen a lot of reaction by developers that like seems a little sensational, but you know, maybe that's just my fairly uneducated opinion on it. I think the ones that really get to me are like the content creators slash like news creators in the gaming sphere, as well as the journalists, because every time this happens, it's good that they cover it, right? Like just like I am right now. But there's always this like, these really grandiose statements about like, this is the status of the industry and this is, you know, evil corporations, capitalism and all that. And then they're going to be asking Microsoft for codes next week, right? Or whenever they have their next game come in, or, you know, every time these things happen, when Ubisoft lays people off, EA, you know, there's always this big uproar over it, which is totally fair, which is justified, right? But then it just goes away until the next one. it's kind of like that outrage cycle. And like when I see fans, consumers, stuff like that getting upset about it, when I see devs getting upset about it, I think that's great. You know, those are the voices that should be speaking. I mean, these devs need to unionize. They need to figure out a way, at least in the United States, to unionize and make one big union. And maybe they can protect themselves from this, or at least make sure they're treated well when these things happen. But when I see journalists and content creators and stuff getting real in the mix of this and like really digging in and being like just like very prophetic or whatever the right word is, it's like kind of cringy to me because it's just content for them. Like it or not, this is news for them to cover on whatever their place of, you know, content or work is. And it always just comes off as so like performative to me, of this like performative outrage or whatever, where it's like, oh, this is awful, Xbox at it again, or corporations, or and I think the toughest one for me is to see the takes of like, and it happens every single time, especially in this last year, so-and-so company made this much money last year and now they're laying people off. You know, why aren't they cutting CEO pay or firing the CEO? And I'm not going to pretend like I am a business person, and I won't even pretend like I fully understand the reasoning behind all these decisions they're making. But one thing my brain can put together is that these layoffs aren't happening because of money necessarily, or how much money they made last year. That obviously, like, that seems so obvious. Almost every single one of these companies besides the Embracer Group, who's done layoffs in the last year, was doing fine. And I guess maybe Bungie as well. I don't know. But it's so obvious that this isn't we didn't make enough money last year, so we're going to lay people off now. So then when you see all these content creators, especially ones with really large audiences, who are just going to simp for whatever they say anyways, and are just going to, you know, repeat what they say and have their opinions because that's just how some people work. You know, Microsoft made, what was like, $3.2 trillion or whatever they made last year. You know, now they're laying these people off. They just paid $70 billion for ABK, and now they're laying people off. That's not why they're laying people off. Those things aren't connected. Like they aren't in the same ballpark. They're laying people off from what it seems like. Like one thing that got laid off from Microsoft was their physical game department. So the folks who do, I assume, all the logistics and planning and stuff to release their games physically. That studio is gone, or that team is gone. I don't know if that was ABK specific or if that was Microsoft. There's been a lot of news, right? Xbox is obviously moving towards digital. So those people are gone, and that sucks. And I hope they find new jobs. I hope they, can network and replace that ASAP. But that's just like the evolution of their business, right? And then all these devs getting laid off. It sucks. It's awful. But COVID happened. There's a big boom in the game industry. Most of the big studios and publishers staffed way up to try to pump games out, especially working from home because productivity was down for that and all everything, right? And now we're coming out of that. That boom is going away. Gaming is still doing well financially, but it's not the same as it was. And when that happens, I assume they're probably returning staffing levels to pre-COVID levels, because they don't need to be staffed up anymore because it's not necessary. And unfortunately, that means a bunch of the people or a bunch of the positions that were staffed up over the last 3-4 years are going to go away. And that's what's happening. Let me reiterate, I'm not defending this process. I'm not celebrating layoffs. I don't think it's a good thing. I think it sucks. I think that it's killing people's livelihoods. It's making people unsure about what to do. I think in the short term, it's awful because these people are going to have to find new jobs. They're going to have, maybe they just moved to Seattle or whatever, or wherever their studio is, and they just got settled and they have a family, and now that's all getting messed up. That stuff is all awful. It deserves to be talked about. You know, those people's stories should be heard. We should be hearing from those devs. People should be promoting them as much as they can if they have those kind of connections and doing what they can. There's also a discussion to have about the long-term impact of this, though, not just Microsoft, but all of these layoffs over the last year. You know, while they are for better or worse, you know, pretty normal business, and it is pretty normal in tech. It's at least being talked about a lot more, even if this is quote unquote normal. It's being talked about more than ever, it seems like. And you have to think about some of those schools that are supposed to, was like Full Sail University, and you know, some of these places where, or even just regular universities that have gaming programs. You know, you're in one of those programs, or if you're just in like a tech education, or you know, you're working your way up to try to go be a game dev. Well, you know, people are, you know, these younger people especially are going to start doing the math and being like, you know, I can go and be in that industry. It seems pretty volatile. If you hear game devs talk, it sounds like people who do what they do in other parts of the tech industry. So, you know, say you have a programmer that works in gaming, well, a programmer that works in another part of the tech industry, it sounds like the gaming folks are normally making a lot less than the other ones. I think what you're going to start to see is people who would have gone into game dev, you know, before, you know, in the next 5-10 years, you may see those people go other places, whether it's into AI or some of these other trendy things, or just some things that aren't trendy, the networking and things like that. I think the long-term issue with all these layoffs, especially, you know, the amount that they're publicized, which is fine, which is a good thing, is that it's going to hurt gaming in the long run when it comes to developers and stuff like that. And, you know, we won't see the repercussions of it yet, but maybe we will. You know, a lot of these people getting laid off, you know, we always say like, well, I hope they find new jobs as soon as possible, which we do. But, you know, there's almost certainly a large chunk of these people who get laid off who leave the industry and go to a new tech sector or go back to school to do something else or whatever. You know, the idea is always like, oh, well, they all find new jobs, or they make their own studios and make their own jobs. And, you know, well, I'm sure that happens, sure, but that's not everyone's reality. And so this is a subject that's like really confusing for me, because on one side I see the tragedy of it and the unfairness of it. And I think that's real, and that should be talked about, and that should be a big subject, right? But then I see, you know, and I feel bad for the people impacted in that case. But then on the other side, I see people on the periphery of this kind of using it. And maybe they have good intent, or maybe they don't. I can't really judge that. But it definitely just feels weird sometimes, where you see these people, you know, making these big statements and things that even seem like they aren't completely true or accurate, but they're emotional and they feel good to read and agree with, even if they aren't very productive or anything. And it just, you know, like in a lot of cases, you know, you feel bad for the actual problem, but then some of the reaction, it almost feels unproductive. And it feels like it almost distracts from the actual problem. At least that's my opinion. You know, I'm willing to be wrong, and I can even admit it sometimes. But yeah, so this layoff, it's, you know, there's another layoff I'm going to talk about towards the end of the show. It sucks. It's awful. And they're probably not over. So I guess we'll be mad about this one until the next one happens, because, you know, it's almost certain. Moving on to some PlayStation news, their new CEO confirms that they have a focus on PC, mobile, and cloud services. This is something I talk about fairly often, and I think it comes off as probably more negative than it should, or maybe not. Maybe I'm downplaying, you know, my bias or whatever. But Sony, in my opinion, I've talked a lot about this, has a very clear strategy of sell as many consoles as possible, even if it means we will sell less games or whatever. And what I mean by that is especially in the way they treat PC. You know, it's pretty common, and it's been the pattern so far, at least, that these first-party games come out for PlayStation. The Last of Us, God of War, Horizon, you know, all these games. And then it's a good 3 or 4 year wait until we get those on PC. Now, that's opposed to their competitor, at least in theory, Xbox, that often releases their first party games day and day, which, you know, same day as console, same day on PC. I've seen explanations of this from people being like, well, PlayStation, they focus on the console, and that's why their games come out in, you know, pretty bug-free states and things like that. And then they have a third-party studio or another studio do the PC port in the years following. And there's probably some truth to that. I'm sure that when you are developing a game just for your PS5, it makes it easier than trying to make it work on PC as well, because, you know, developing games to work on PC is probably the most complicated thing you can possibly do. Because you're talking about having to try to make a game work on systems that have hardware that are 7, 8, 9 years old, as well as trying to make them also work with the cutting edge tech of people. You know, when people spent $5,000 on their computer and they play your game, you want them to be happy with that experience, because you know, that's an important part of your player base. But then you also want the person who's still making that build from 8 years ago still work. They still got that 1080 Ti, and you want them to have a good experience too. So PC development is tough for games. And so I get that explanation for PlayStation to a point. But I also think the more important part of this is they want to sell as many consoles as possible. So if they put their games out on PC day one, that would be fewer console sales. Because there's absolutely, I know dozens of people who buy their games when they come out on PlayStation. They play through them, they enjoy them, and then when they come out on PC years later, they do it again. And so they get to double dip with this, including the console sale. And I think that's been a pretty clear strategy by them. That's why when they make all these comparisons of, you know, PlayStation 5 is double or even tripling the sales of Xbox and things like that, there's so many factors in there. But one of them is, if you just have a decent PC, you can play Xbox games. You don't have to get a Series S or a Series X. And so, you know, you aren't forced to buy a console, where with PlayStation you are. And that's fine. Obviously, people don't mind because tons of people are doing it. So this statement is really interesting, in my opinion, from the new CEO, who I think is still the interim CEO. I don't know if they were named the permanent or not. But, you know, supposedly having this dedication to PC, mobile, and cloud is interesting. You know, they've had cloud services of some type for a while, both that you play from your console through a mobile device or having actual cloud servers similar to what Xbox has. Mobile is an interesting one because we do know that I believe they have an app where you can stream games through that as well. And then PC, you know, they release their games, I believe, through Steam. And they, I believe, in the last couple of years acquired the studio that they were often using for PC ports. So it used to be a third-party studio. Now it's owned by Sony. And, you know, their ports are kind of hit or miss to PC. They're a little rough. So I think it's, you know, that explanation of trying to develop for the console and PC at the same time is really hard. Well, obviously, because their PC ports often are awful. Now, would that be the case if it was like Santa Monica or Naughty Dog doing that development instead of a third party doing the PC one? I suspect it would be better if their actual first party studios were doing the ports. But that's not how it works, and I suspect that's not going to change. Maybe it will, but we'll have to wait and see. What's going to be really interesting for PlayStation, and I think why he may be making this statement, is that with this focus on live service, even though I think they've canceled like half of the live service games they were working on not too long ago, the live service games, there's a pretty big argument that you want that on as many places as possible. So, the marathon that's coming from Bungie, I believe that's supposed to be all platforms anyways, including Xbox, because of Bungie's unique deal. But say that Naughty Dog The Last of Us game that was going to be out, that was going to be a multiplayer live service game, certainly they were going to release that on PC and console at the same time. It's canceled now, but that would have made sense. With live service games, you don't want exclusivity. Obviously, you know, you'll still have some exclusivity when it comes to between the consoles, even though we've heard those rumors of games like Sea of Thieves from Xbox potentially coming to PlayStation, because in games like that, in cooperative or multiplayer live service games, you just, you know, you want as many players as possible. And so we'll see how that all works. And I'm really curious to if PlayStation, especially with PC, changes their behavior in recent years. And maybe is willing to sell a few less consoles to sell a few more games, which surely the margins are higher on, but they know better than I do. Jumping over to Nintendo, they are shutting down 3DS and Wii U online servers on April 8th of 2024. This is an interesting one for me because I was selling, I believe, 3DSs when I was still working at GameStop many a year ago. I believe I left before the Wii U came out, though. So I'd have to look at my dates and see if any of that makes sense. But I swear I remember selling 3DSs. I think we were still selling Wiis when I was there. So it's kind of an interesting one. The Wii U was obviously pretty well, you know, known as a pretty big failure for Nintendo, which is weird for them. And it seems like they're probably happy to be continuing to get past that era. But the 3DS, you know, having that exclusive handheld, you know, with the way Switch is now, where it's both, you know, I think there's some ups and downs to that. So, you know, kind of a bummer to see that happening. I hope the people who still were playing on those systems are able to get everything downloaded and stuff they need to before then. There is a rumor going around, again, unconfirmed, about the next Switch or the next Nintendo hardware that is going to be using an 8-inch LCD screen. This was followed by some upset Nintendo gamers who were really hoping they were going to have an OLED screen, which is just, if you don't know the difference, it's just OLED is brighter, it just looks a lot better, it's more vibrant, and it's more power efficient. But this is what happened with the Switch. They released a regular LCD screen, and then years later they did an OLED, and kind of like what I was talking about with the Sony double dip, there's a lot of people who bought both of those Switches. And so, you know, people are going to moan and groan that it's not going to have OLED. And then they're going to go buy when it comes out a couple of years later. I'm very curious about this next Switch. I haven't had a Nintendo console since my Game Boy Color, I think. And I really want one of these new consoles, though I am pretty hesitant. When the Switch came out, it was already very well outdated. And there's some of the rumors about the chipset that this new one may be using. It may be using tech that's like 3 or 4 years old, even though it has DLSS and stuff like that. I understand, and this happened every time I talk about this, people are like, well, you know, Nintendo's not trying to compete with Xbox and PlayStation on graphics. I understand that. That is very obvious, even though there's no real good excuse for that. Nintendo is richer than God. They should be able to be competitive. They just don't want to be, that's their prerogative. The biggest issue, though, in my opinion, though, is that with the Switch, sure, they weren't going for current gen graphics, and they certainly didn't get there, but then they also didn't get current gen performance either. And even pretty early into the cycle of this console, the Switch, it was struggling to play games at even 30 FPS in pretty mediocre graphics, let alone if you put it up on a big screen. And I suspect this new console is going to deal with the same issues. I know it's supposed to have DLSS and stuff, and you know that can carry it for a while, but it probably not for very long if the actual hardware isn't that powerful. And I just I understand that even with the new console, they're not going to be trying to compete with the current gen systems, and that's fine. You know, we don't have to shoot for 4K 120 FPS. But man, like 720p 60 FPS to be standard on your games would be nice. And I suspect they won't do that. I'm sure the launch games will be fine, but I wouldn't be surprised if, again, for another generation in a row, they end up having pretty inferior hardware just because they're okay with that. And that's frustrating to me. It doesn't matter. They're going to sell 125 million units of it anyways. So me moaning and groaning about it won't matter. I'll probably be one of them. But it's just like annoying to know that they could do better and they just don't, they know they don't have to. And that's the way it's going to go. The last thing here is that the Pokemon Company has released a statement telling people, I'm paraphrasing, to leave them alone about Power World. They're aware of it. I'm sure they're looking into if there are any issues that they can deal with legally, but that game's been in development and known for a long time, and they haven't taken action yet. A really interesting thing I've seen noted is to remember that both of the companies, both Power World's developer and Nintendo, are Japanese companies. There's no fair use laws in Japan, And so if Nintendo wanted to go after them, they could do it directly all in Japan. There wouldn't have to be any international courts and things like that. They could do it natively, and they haven't. And if you don't know, Nintendo is the most litigious company in the entire world, at least as far as I know. So the fact that they haven't done that yet is notable, especially when someone did release a Pokemon mod for Power World, and within 8 hours, it had been DMCA'd and taken down by Nintendo. So they're obviously paying attention to what's happening with Power World, but, you know, all the legal experts on Twitter and YouTube who think that it's this big ripoff game, which, like, in a way it is, but from a legal standpoint, it probably isn't, or else I suspect Nintendo would have taken care of that very well by now. So moving into non-console specific news, I'll actually talk about Power World. So I did finally jump in and play it the last couple nights. I'm not really into survival games. I haven't played a Pokemon game since my Game Boy Color. I'm level, I think, 16. I have all these pals. I'm grinding away, and it's a lot of fun. It's a game that I probably won't play forever. I'll probably play it quite a bit, though, because it's just the gameplay. It has a good hook. It's pretty clear what you're trying to do. The way that you progress and stuff in it is pretty clear. It just basically, you need to build these things, and to build these things, you need to have this stuff, and to get that stuff, you need to be at this level, and to get to that level, you need to go capture, you know, the pals, which is their, what the animals are called. You need to capture them, beat bosses, you know, progress the story for whatever story there is. It's not much. And it's just a fun loop. It's visually nice to look at for the most part. It's like a little jank, but it's fine. I know there's the issues with how close some of the designs are. I'm definitely of the opinion of, like, yeah, that's kind of lame, but, like, if Nintendo doesn't care, why do I? At least from, like, a more serious legal perspective. The rumors about them using AI to design these characters, no actual evidence of that has been shown yet. So, you know, I am not a big fan of AI and all of that. You know, I tend to lean against using it. But in this case, we're still yet to see any, like, hard evidence that they did. Really, the only evidence being so far is that the CEO of the developer is really into AI. So, you know, maybe they did, and if that comes out, you know, that will be worth talking about. But for now, it's kind of a nothing burger, in my opinion. And the numbers don't lie. Power World became the second most concurrent player game ever on Steam. The last article I could find, which wasn't exactly current, says that it sold over 8 million copies. And the kicker for me to remember is that there's a lot of people like me out there. I haven't paid for Power World. It's on Xbox Game Pass for PC and console. And I know, Xbox sucks. No one buys it. There's a lot of Xboxes out there. There's millions and millions of them. There's a lot of people on Game Pass. The most recent estimate is around 33 million. Both playing it, using it on PC or console. And it's just wild to think that this game has sold over 8 million copies, has all these people playing it concurrently, and none of those numbers count how many people are concurrently playing on Xbox, PC, or console. It's not counting either one of those, and it's not obviously counting those as sales either, because it's baked in. But the fact that they're getting that kind of response from a game that's also on a subscription service, I mean, you know, maybe, you know, there's a lot of reasons why this game is so popular, not all of them being the game itself. It seems like it's also just kind of part of the conversation right now, which is definitely helping it. But I even got hyped up for a few days and heard all the hype and then played it, which is typically for me a recipe for disaster, where I'm going to be like, okay, this isn't as good as they were acting like it is. Power World's pretty good. And it's kind of like Baldur's Gate 3 to me, where I don't like turn-based fighting games, I don't really like high fantasy games, and I still manage to love Baldur's Gate 3, despite the fact that even I've tried to play those type of games since Baldur's Gate, and I don't like them still. I just like Baldur's Gate. Almost how I feel about The Division as well. I love The Division 1 and 2. I can't get into any other looter shooters. That's kind of how I feel about Power World. I don't really like survival games. I haven't been into Pokemon in a really, really long time. Like, literally 20 plus years. But it's got me. But I don't really plan on jumping into other games like that now. So It's an interesting game. Down in the comments, if you're on YouTube, let me know if you've been playing Power World and how you have been enjoying it. Hitting some of our last stories here. Apple is now allowing game streaming apps like Xbox Cloud Streaming and GeForce onto their App Store. Previously, the only way you could make that stuff work was by like figuring out how to make the browser do it and stuff like that. And Apple's been having beef with basically anyone who wants to put a subscription service on their App Store without using their payment system, which they take a big old fat cut out of. If you've seen all the drama between them and Epic with Fortnite, it's a hot mess. So this is really cool. This is going to be, I think, a pretty big deal, at least here in the United States. The iPhone's the most popular phone here, even though worldwide Android tends to kick its butt pretty well. It matters here in the States, and having that available natively is a pretty big deal for both of those services. I know that if you're listening to this podcast, and including myself, maybe we're not into cloud gaming and stuff like that. Other people are, and for a lot of people, it's the only way they play games, and especially worldwide, but I think it's happening more domestically as well, especially as internet speeds get more consistent and things like that. And so we may want to ignore some of this stuff because it doesn't matter to us, but it's going to matter in the big picture. And that's why you see Xbox going hard after it, PlayStation going hard after it, Apple going into it. Be on the lookout for what's going on there. Also be on the lookout for more layoffs from Riot. They laid off 530 people, which is around 11% of their workforce. But in a weird turn, actually got a lot of praise, at least as much as they can get in this situation, because they offered what a bunch of developers described as, and even myself seemed to know this, was one of a pretty insane severance package to all the people who were leaving. Like really, really significant. I'm not going to read through every one of them or try to recollect it, but it's really impressive. It's very clearly laid out on their website if you want to go check it out. So obviously, again, we're never going to celebrate layoffs, but we will celebrate companies that at least do it right and offer like extensive services to the people whose lives they are, you know, for lack of a better term, ruining. You know, good on Riot, which is something we haven't been able to say for a long time. I'm glad it seems like they handled this as well as you can, even though we still don't like layoffs and such. The final story is fantastic. The disgraced developers of The Day Before release a super weird couple letters on their Twitter, basically blaming bloggers and everyone else for the failure of their project and the bad reputation that they've gotten. This is amid some stories that they may be secretly developing a new game under a different studio name. The weird thing is that there's very little reason to believe that that studio is more than the two brothers that we've always seen talking about it. Even with The Day Before, we know that a lot of the people who worked on that game were like volunteer remote developers who like never actually like worked at a studio or something, even though they said that they moved their studio from like Siberia in Russia to somewhere, I think, in the Philippines or Thailand or something. But then someone who lived wherever they said they moved to went and found where they were, and it was literally just a P.O. box, basically. It wasn't a real studio. These dudes are weird. It's a very odd story, and it seems like, for better or worse, they're kind of using their 15 minutes of fame or infamy, depending on how you look at it. And yeah, we'll see what happens with them in the long run. I suspect they'll be annoying for a very long time. That's all the stories I have this week. I will move to the listener questions, or I'm just going to rename it Master Prime 901's hour, or 5 minutes of questions. I blame myself for the fact that there isn't more interaction with the podcast, even though there's still a pretty good number of people watching it or listening to it. I just don't know what to do. So this year, one of my big goals is to try to reach out to some resources and try to figure out how I can, you know, improve interaction with the podcast from listeners, increase listenership and things like that. But if you have your own questions for next week, be sure to jump into our Discord in the YouTube comments. Hit me up on Twitter at Bond Diesel or at The Bonfire, or use the Google form that I post all over the place every week to submit questions, topics, or even feedback about the show. Master Prime this week has three questions per usual. Thoughts on Yakuza Infinite Wealth. I tried to get into Like a Dragon, did not like it even a little bit. But it's one of those things where I recognize I'm the one who's wrong. And it seems like this new one's being received extremely well. I think the DLC stuff with New Game Plus is kind of lame, and it's funny to see people who I think would typically be upset about that in other games be so hyped for this game that they're kind of brushing it off. But that's a statement for how much people love this game, and I think that in its own way is cool. Though it would be cool if they maybe make that situation a little better. But yeah, seems like it's exactly what people wanted it to be, and that's really awesome for the people who love that game and that series. Second question, do you think a Starfield sequel is a possibility? I mean, probably, but man, like, if you're talking about the Elder Scrolls 6 isn't going to be coming out for at least 4 or 5 years, like 2030 maybe, and then Todd Howard said the next game is Fallout, probably Fallout 5, I guess, and so that's like 2035 or so. And so if there's a Starfield sequel, if they continue developing games the way they currently are, I bet they don't. I bet they start developing more games at once. So all these timelines could be off. But sure, Starfield 2 in 2040. Let's do it. I will be 50 years old. Oh, man. Older, actually. So let's deal with that. But yeah, I think they will. I think it'll happen. As much as the conversation about that game has soured, I still don't think people realize that. I think Bethesda and Xbox and Microsoft see that game as a pretty huge success. And they should, because it's really, really good. And I'm excited to see how much it improves over the years, both from Bethesda's work and from fan work. Last question, what modern trends do you want to see in the next Mass Effect and the Division game, Mass Effect 4 and Division 3? I mean, fidelity is the big one. Maybe some more modern ways of storytelling, kind of what we saw a little bit with Baldur's Gate 3, especially relationships. And I'm not just talking about romances, but I'm talking about like dynamic interactions between players that have multiple points of being dynamic, and multiple points of impacting the story and things like that. That's what I'm really looking for is that basically. So, I for both of those games, even Division 3, I would like to see what seems to be starting to get away from the looter shooter genre. I would love to see that happen with the Division 3. I still think that franchise is a looter shooter at heart, but I would love for them to maybe stray a little bit away from just trying to be Destiny with their own spin. I would really like to see it retain elements that are core to the series, but really try to kind of set its own path. Because I just think that the Division story and world deserves to be told in such a better way than it currently can be in the type of game that it is. So that's what I'm hoping for. Thank you so much for the questions. Again, if you have your own, please get them to me in one of the many ways I described before. And that is where I'm going to wrap it up. Once again, thank you so much for listening to this episode, and please consider participating in the next show by submitting a question or comment or some feedback to the Discord, the Google form, all of those places I mentioned before. You can find me all over the internet as Bon Diesel, including on Twitch and YouTube. You can see my other content or find ways to support everything I do by clicking the link in the description of the show below. Check out my other stuff. I'm really proud of everything I'm doing. That's all I have for this one. So, until next time.